accession number 26354 Real One.
Could you give me your full name and date of birth, please?
Donald Hart, 4th of the 3rd, 23.
And what was your rank on finishing your service?
Lance Sergeant.
And what were the dates of your service?
Date of my army service?
Yes.
From the 29th of January 1942 until the 1946, November 46.
And did you have any military experience before you enlisted? Were any of your family in the military?
No, the only military experience I've ever had was in May 1940, on the radio, Mr. Anthony Eden broadcast a statement to the country. This was at the time of Dunkirk, that they would like all available people over the age of 17 and under 50 to enlist in a new unit, which is going to be called the Local Defence Volunteers, which turned out to be the Home Guard in the long run. And if you're interested, would you report to the police station next morning? At that time, I was a postman, and on the way to work, I called in at the local... I lived in Cornwall, in a big parish, where we had one policeman. No police station as such, but to us, he was the police in its entirety. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So on the way to work, I popped off at his house, which is Cornwall County Constabulary House, and asked to see the policeman. His wife said, "Oh, he's out. What did you want to see him for?" So I told her what the message was on the radio the night before, and she didn't know anything about it. So she said, "Well, you better leave me your name and address, and when he comes in, I'll give it to him." So that was my first patriotic gesture, you know, when I was just gone 17 to join up. I was obviously the first one in the parish to volunteer my services, but it stood me in good stead for when I was eventually called up, because I learnt a lot of things in the Home Guard, like rifle shooting and all that sort of thing, and without bragging, I turned out to be a good shot, you know what I mean, when they're on the ranges. But that's beside the point. But I felt that when I was invited on the 29th of January 1942 to report to Dorchester Barracks, if I was a member of the Home Guard, they would like me to wear my uniform, because that saved them rigging me out with another uniform, which I did. And I then had a 12-week initial training course, 6 weeks of which were going to be square bashing and all the usual nonsense. Shouldn't say that word in here, but all the usual things of corporals yelling like mad, sergeants yelling like mad, sergeant majors shouting, "Get your hair cut." Everything happened in those 6 weeks. And then I had a chance to go on a driving course, which I took advantage of. And in those days, when you're driving heavy vehicles, lorries and things like that, or even old cars, there was no synchromesh gearboxes. You had to go through what they called the gate, and you had to learn to double D clutch and all that sort of thing. Well, prior to joining up and prior to the Home Guard, even when I was only about 13, I used to help a milkman on his milk wagon on a Saturday morning. And when we got onto the private roads, which was a lot of private roads around there, he used to let me drive this old... Now, if I said a bull-nosed Morris, would you know what I meant?
I wouldn't know.
Well, it's a very old car, about 1930s or something like that. And the radiator was a rounded brass thing. A bit of an old banger, you'd call it these days. But that had this gearbox where you had the double D clutch. Do you know what I mean by that?
I've heard of it, but...
Yeah, well, it's a special way of changing gears so you don't crash the gears when you go from fourth down to third or from third down to second or even into first. And I learned a lot by doing this little private driving, so that when I went on this course in the army, I knew all about double D clutching and all that sort of thing, and the sergeant in charge of the, as far as I was concerned, in charge of the vehicle, he congratulated me on my driving in as much as I didn't crash the gears. So I told him why, and he said, well, you're a born, what I would call a born driver, and I see I'm not going to have any problems with you at all for the next 6 weeks. So he said, we'll see if we can enjoy ourselves, you know, because I shall have to worry about your doing silly things, you know. So I felt really confident and went all over the area of Dorset, around Dorchester, Weymouth, and all around there, and Portlandville, on these driving lessons.
Driving on Portland Bill at that time, with those sort of cars driving up from Fortuneswell up to the Portland Heights, must have been quite interesting.
Yes, well, as I say, that hill, because it's quite a steep hill up to from the Chesil Bank up to the thing, that hill was a good training for changing gears, wasn't it? You know, all that sort of thing. And I love driving. I always have liked driving. And how can I put it? I found that that was my... my choice in the army, that's what I would like to be, a driver. So at the end of the 6 weeks, I was posted then to my battalion, which was the 6th Battalion, the Duke of Cornwall's Light Infantry, stationed on the Lizard Peninsula in Cornwall. And when I got there, to my disappointment, I was told, well, unfortunately at the moment there's no vacancy for a driver. Would you mind going to a company as an ordinary rifleman? So I had no option but to say, oh, certainly, sir. But the way he put it, it was an invitation that I could refuse if I wanted to. Anyway, I went to this C Company, 6th Battalion, Duke of Cornwall's Light Infantry, and we were in wooden huts and breeze block things and Nissen huts on this. You ever been to the Lizard?
Yes.
Well, it's very bleak, isn't it? On the way to this place, we passed the what was just being built at that time, the radio telescope sites. You know what I mean?
The radar?
The radio telescopes, you know, those big round disc things. Anyway, a very bleak place, flat, on an uninviting countryside. And we did schemes, we did PT schemes, route marches, and although I'm a Cornishman, I learned more about Cornwall in the 10 months that I was in the infantry than I ever learned in my life prior to that. But there came a time when, I think it must have been late August or early September, there's a notice came on the orderly war, drivers wanted, report to the Sergeant Major. So I immediately went in and asked to see him. I said, I can't understand this, Sergeant Major. I'm posted here as a driver, and I was told by HQ that when a vacancy came up, I would get the job. And yet you're asking for drivers. He said, yes, but you can't go. I said, why not? No, you can't have the job. I said, why not? He said, you're going on a course. So I said, what sort of course? I can't tell you that, it's top secret. So I said, well, when is the course? Can't tell you that, it's top secret. I said, well, tell me where I'm going then. Can't tell you that, it's top secret, but you will know in time. So I thought, well, this is a funny racket. So on the 9th of November, I got a... Or it might have been either the 9th of November 42 or the day before. I had a ticket to report to number 9 technical training group at Folkestone in Kent. So I was imagining it must have been the day before. I don't know whether we travelled overnight. I don't remember that. But there was two of us, me from the C Company and another rifleman from, I think it was B Company, both Cornish blokes. And we finished up in Folkestone Station. And we asked the porter where number 9 technical training group was. Now, in those days, I don't know what it's like in the army now, but in those days, when you're posted from A to B, you took everything in your kit bag, you had all your full equipment on your back, you had your rifle and all everything like that, so you had everything that was issued to you with you. So when we asked this bloke where number 9 technical training group was, he said, go down the bottom of the road, turn left, it's just round the corner. Oh, we thought, that's lovely. Nice little jaunt down there, you know. When we turned the corner, we couldn't see nothing. So we kept walking, and about 3/4 mile afterwards, which is just round the corner, we found this big garage building, and we found that was where we were destined to go. So we went in, reported in to the Sergeant Major in charge, and he took us into the office, saw the captain, Captain Nutt, I believe his name was, and he welcomed us into the thing. He said, do you know why you're here? I said, no, I haven't got a clue, sir. He said, well, you're here for 3 months training to be a motor mechanic. So I thought, well, that's nice. And at the end of that time, you will be compulsory transferred to a new unit called the Royal Electrical Mechanical Engineers. So he said, now, the good news is that you're not going to be in barracks or anything like that. You're going to be in civvy billets. And your billet will be to go up the road, first turning left and first turning right, and you're in Lyons Road, and you call it number 8, and that's where you'll be for the next 3 months. So we walked up there, and as we turned the corner, they were semi-detached houses with the front doors facing each other in between the two houses. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, as we turned the corner, there was this lovely girl cleaning the brass on the front door knocker. And I'm not kidding you, my heart missed a beat. Oh my God, I'm going to marry that girl, just like that. You think I'm pulling your line, but I really fell for her. Just, she had a beautiful smile, very petite girl, 5'2", and I thought, that's the girl for me. So I went in and saw her mother and father. He was an elderly chap who was a regular soldier in the army. Nice man. Gave us a good welcome. And this girl ignored me for weeks, weeks and weeks. And her father apparently, unbeknown to me, her father said to her once, "You ought to be ashamed of yourself." And she said, "Why?" "That poor boy, he's moonstruck over you and you're just completely ignoring him. Oh, he's a bit of a drip." You with me? So, anyway, on Christmas Eve of that year, I was taken ill. I was taken to a big hotel in Folkestone, on the Leas in Folkestone, which was what they call a passive aid detachment, where you reported in sick and they decided what to do. So they decided to take me to a hospital. So they put me in the ambulance and off we went. And I said to the driver before we started off, I said, "Can you do me a favour, just pop into my civvy billets so I can tell the people where I'm going?" "Well, all right then," he said. So he dropped me off outside the house. And he went in and told the people that I was in the ambulance. And this girl came out. And I told her I loved her and I wanted to marry her. And she burst into tears. And she realised that she fancied me. After all this time. Anyway, cut a long story short, that was on Christmas Day, 1942, and on the 24th of April in 1943, I married her. Right? So, joining the Rimi was my luckiest day in my life, because that's the day I met my wife. And this year, April this year, we celebrated our 60th anniversary.
Excellent.
With a card from Her Majesty the Queen, which is very nice.
Yes, wonderful.
Yes. So this is where the not fun starts, but after I completed the course in Folkestone, I then did a 6-week course in Brighton as a fitter, which meant welding, both electric and acetylene welding, filing things so that you fitted a male thing into a female thing with no gaps, no slackness, you know, absolute perfection, making white metal bearings and scraping them to fit the crankshaft on the engines and all that, which I passed out. So at the end of that 6 weeks, I was then sent to the holding centre as a motor mechanic class 3. And
what rank were you at this stage?
Craftsman.
Yeah.
The lowest of the low, really, you know. And then, let me recollect my thoughts for a minute. Yeah, we went to this holding place. I think it was Catford, I'm not sure. But it came on the order board. And by a strange coincidence, two of us were looking at the order board at the same time. And on the order board it said that Craftsman Hart 141, which is the last three numbers, posted to Ashford in Middlesex. And below that was this other Hart I don't know what his number was, posted to Ashford in Kent. And we had been talking to each other, and we both thought, oh God, what a blooming shame, that's the wrong way round. I'd like to be in Ashford in Kent, 15 miles from my missus, and he lived in London, and he'd write me. So we thought, well, what can we do about this? So, rightly or wrongly, we went and saw the posting clerk and put it to him that as we're both named Hart, and as we're both going to Ashford, one in Middlesex, one in Kent, could the position be reversed so that we change places? Oh no, I can't do that, he said. Well, why not? Nobody's going to know. We shan't tell anybody. Only, my wife lives in Folkestone. I've only just got married, and Ashford in Kent is only 15 miles from Folkestone. And the other chap, he lives in London. It'd be worth it to you, and put our hands in a pocket and pull that 10-pound note each, you know. And his eyes lit up, you know. Well, look, I don't know anything about this at all. If anything goes wrong, I haven't done anything at all. But give me the money. So, I went to Ashford in Kent. When I got there, I found this was Templar Barracks at Ashford. I found out this was a tank depot. So I thought, well, this is a bit of a turn up. So I reported in, and said who I was. I was a motor mechanic, vehicle mechanic, class 3. Oh, we haven't asked for a class 3 vehicle mechanic, we want a tank mechanic. I haven't got a clue about a tank or what's on the tank, what's the engines or anything like that. Because I shouldn't be there, should I?
No.
So they said, well, we'll have to get you sorted out. Temporarily, you'll have to look after the vehicles then, and we'll sort you out. So I thought, well, I'm 15 miles from Folkestone. I'll get my parents to send my bike up by train. And every available evening, I got on my bike and went home to Folkestone and came back by midnight, or 11:59 to be precise. It had to be a minute before midnight. And that was very enjoyable. And then I suppose they caught up with me that they didn't want me at Templar Barracks. So they posted me to another holding battalion. And
where was the holding battalion?
Where was it?
Yeah.
Hucknall, I think it was, up in Nottinghamshire. And we did a bit of training there and all that sort of thing. And then they told us that we're going on invocation leave, 7 days. I think it was 7 days. Invocation leave prior to going abroad. So where are we going? Ah, no, we can't tell you that. But we had to, after the embarkation leave, we had to report back to Hucknall, and then they took us up to Liverpool, to Princess Pier, which is the pier just outside the Liver buildings, where all the liners embark from. And we went on this lovely liner, the Athlone Castle. Quite a new ship, actually. It was built in 1936, and this was 1943, so it wasn't all that old. And when we got loaded up with all these troops, they set sail and went up to Greenock, up on the Clyde. And we were anchored off Greenock for 3 days, and we eventually found out that we were waiting for the convoy to form up to go off somewhere. And when we set sail, it took us 10 days to get to where we finished up, which was in the Mediterranean at Algiers. And when we landed there, we found that it was a new company called the Number 5 Equipment Assembly Company. We had a bombed site in Algiers near the docks, and our job was to take these packing cases, really, strip them all off and uncover a chassis of a car or a vehicle of any description, half tracks and everything like that, just down to the chassis. Not the half tracks, of course, because they were armoured vehicles, but the ordinary lorries and cars. And we had to build them up into the cars because everything was bolted, the wings were bolted on, the doors were bolted on, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we finished up doing that for 6 months until they decided that there's no need for any more in North Africa. We'd have to go to Italy, where we landed at Naples, posted to a transit camp there, and this was... Do you know much about the history of the war?
Yeah.
Well, this was at the time of Cassino, which is a bloody battle, but we couldn't get past Cassino because it was such a fortress and all that sort of thing. So they decided to have a bridgehead landing at a place called Anzio, which was north of Cassino but south of Rome. You with me?
Yes, yes.
And I was in this transit camp, sweating on the top line that I wouldn't be posted to Anzio. A bit of a coward at heart. And digressing slightly, the first night we were there, we were within good visibility. I think in a straight line, we were about 7 or 8 miles from Vesuvius, in a straight line. Don't ask me where the roads went, but although I couldn't speak Italian, there were one or two people who could speak a bit of Italian. And they said to the local people, that mountain has got smoke coming out of it. Is that dangerous? Oh no, they said. All the time she smokes, she's safe. So we took their word for it. That was on the Monday. On the Saturday night, Vesuvius blew a top. So we saw all the wonderful display of a volcano in full swing.
So what did you do then? Were you close or did you have to move?
No, we were in this transit camp, which was a tented camp. On the Sunday morning, we had porridge, the most gritty porridge I ever tasted in my life, because all the dust from the lava was coming down, settling on everything. The tents were actually covered in, like a carborundum. You ever seen a grindstone in a workshop? Where they've been grinding metal, and you get all the little bits of the carborundum stone mixed up with the metal. Well, it was just like that on the tents, you know, all gritty substance. But that was an experience which I was in the right place at the right time, put it that way.
So what was, you say the accommodation was tents, what was it generally like? Did you enjoy living under canvas, or what was the routine?
The routine was get out of bed at 6 o'clock in the morning, PT, breakfast, which was done in what they call field kitchens. You know, the cooks had all in the open air, right? And they had 2 32-gallon drums, which was originally crude oil drums, you know. They talk about so much a drum for oil in dollars, 32 gallons in each drum, and that was for the one was for washing your food, your mess kits, and the other one was for this World Cup, you know. And really, it was just boredom waiting to be posted to somewhere else.
Was it the same sort of accommodation in Tangiers as well, the same tents?
Yeah. But eventually, I was posted to Bari in South Italy, to another equipment assembly company, number 6 equipment assembly company. But this time, I wasn't going to be an ordinary craftsman assembling the vehicles. I was going to a new unit just formed up called the Remy Inspectorate. Our job there was to, after these vehicles had been assembled, my responsibility was to take the lorry or whatever it was.